Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness, produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. It's been used as an element of religious practice and as a means of making a political statement. The idea of deliberately abstaining from eating, better known as fasting, has been around for centuries, and a large body of research offers scientific evidence that fasting has significant health benefits. While studies have primarily focused on animal subjects, many researchers, among them the National Institute on Aging, are calling for a well-controlled study of fasting in humans.
Intermittent fasting has been shown to improve the cardiovascular system and memory function of rodents, but what about human beings? What does our current scientific understanding of fasting reveal? Joining us for a discussion of fasting is one of the world's leading experts on the topic. Dr. Walter Longo is a professor in gerontology and professor in biological science at the University of Southern California Leonard Davis School of Gerontology. He's also the director of the USC Longevity Institute.
Welcome to Take Care, Dr. Longo. We appreciate your coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
How do you define fasting, and how long does an individual have to go without food to be in a fasting state?
Yes, there is actually not, believe it or not, there is not an agreement on that, but there are probably three major fasting practices. And one is something called time-restricted feeding, which basically has to do with eating for a certain number of hours per day. For example, you eat 12 hours, you don't eat for 12 hours. That's time-restricted feeding limited to 12 hours. That's one of the categories or one of the methods included when we talk about fasting. The other one is called intermittent fasting. And normally, it refers to two different methods. And one is alternate day fasting. So basically, you either don't eat or eat very little every other day. And the other common intermittent fasting is something called 5-2 or something similar, and it has to do with every third day, basically. So for 2 days, you eat normally, and then on the third day, you either don't eat or eat about 500 calories or so per day. There's also a modified version of that in which the days of fasting per week are consecutive. And then there is what we call periodic fasting, and this instead is not eating for 2 or more days, but normally 4 to 5 days, and that's periodic, so there is no intermittent nature, meaning that it doesn't have to be done in a regular manner. It can be done whenever it's needed. And it can be done either with total fasting, so water-only fasting, or with a fasting-mimicking diet, which is something that may be around above, let's say, 600-700 calories and all the way to 1,100, 1,200 calories, but that has properties that make the body respond as if it was fasting completely.
Let's talk about those properties that you just briefly alluded to, because it seems that fasting in and of itself isn't really the goal. There's something that happens in the body when fasting occurs that many feel is beneficial. So what is going on inside the body during a fast?
A lot is going on in the body when it's fasting, and this goes from an obvious metabolic switch, which is necessary. There is no more sugars basically coming into the system. There are no more proteins coming in, and so the body switches from a mode in which carbohydrates are the main source of fuel to fats, right? So the body starts breaking down the fats, mostly fats that are in the large depositories, in the large storage units, which is the abdominal fat usually. And that's what's being broken down into fatty acid and ketone bodies to fuel the system. And also the body starts, a little bit of the energy comes from, about 4% comes from breaking down proteins in the muscle. And some of this is utilized by the body to produce sugar by the liver by a process called gluconeogenesis. So there is some of the sugar is produced so that the brain can still utilize in part sugar, glucose for fuel. But there is a lot more than that. Something else is called autophagy, so the cells begin to eat their own components inside, they destroy it, and then eventually they replace them. And then there is also breaking down of entire cells, so killing of entire cells, and then eventually the regeneration of these cells that have been killed during fasting when we return to the normal food.
I know some people try these types of diets just for a few months to lose weight, but your research shows that there could be real health benefits in terms of longevity. So I'm curious about what your passion is and what you think we're going to eventually discover through fasting.
Yes, first of all, I think because this is moving into the medical range that it should be respected as such, meaning that fasting, I just give you an example with the brain. After 5 days or so or more of fasting, the brain switches from utilizing exclusively sugar for fuel generation to utilizing both ketone bodies and sugar about 50-50. So this is just to give you one of the many, many examples of how powerful fasting is. And so because it's so powerful, it also has to be respected in the same way that we respect drugs, right? So you don't just go out and take a drug because you heard that a friend of yours used it. You know, there's a process, there's a doctor, there's an FDA approval, or there are certainly clinical studies even for generic drugs. And so the same has to occur and is been occurring for fasting, or at least fasting mimicking diets. But it could be also there are some uses for fasting. The problem with water-only fasting is that it is only feasible if you go to a clinic. A clinic that specializes in water-only fasting, that has medical doctors on site, that has nurses on site, that's the only place that I think most of us will agree water-only fasting belongs. Why? There's many, many side effects. For example, hypotension, hypoglycemia, potentially developing gallstones, problems for anorexic people, for diabetic people, and on and on and on. You know, so this is a problem. Now, fasting mimicking diets, so diets that might have 750, 800 or higher calories, which we've been studying in our laboratory, it's different because they've been tested clinically. And now they cannot be used to treat or prevent diseases because that's an FDA track type of application, meaning that you first need to have an FDA approval, testing and approval. So testing in a clinical trial and then approval by the FDA for something to be used to prevent or treat diseases. But they can certainly be used, for example, to lower cholesterol, to lower fasting glucose, to lower maybe inflammation, systemic inflammation, to lower triglycerides, and potentially some factor biomarkers for cancer.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Raff.
And our guest today is Dr. Walter Longo. He is the director of the USC Longevity Institute. And we are talking about fasting for a variety of reasons. But there is strong scientific evidence to indicate that fasting promotes health. And we're discussing that with Dr. Longo today. Dr. Longo, you talked about fasting mimicking diets. For those who are either fasting on alternate days or eating significantly less, is there a problem that these individuals on the days of quote-unquote normal eating will overeat, kind of negating anything that they may have achieved during those fasting days?
That's been shown to not be the problem. So usually people that eat every other day are going to maybe do 20 to 30% overeating on the fasting day. So that's not a problem. The problem, of course, has to do with compliance. And so, you know, if you go out there, it's difficult enough to have people even do time-restricted feeding, it's extremely difficult and extremely unlikely that people are going to eat every other day. So that's the problem. The other problem is really data. Is there enough data out there to push people towards something that is so drastic, such a drastic change compared to what they've done? I mean, you know, if you take 100 people, how many of them are going to switch to this diet? And is it justified by the data to have that kind of burden? And I will say that it's still very much premature, even if somebody was willing to do it. Now, there are the 5-2 is an easier version of it. And the 5-2 meaning that you are now having a limited number of calories, every third day you have 500 or 600 calories. That's much more reasonable, starting to be much more reasonable. The issue is also how many people are going to be willing to do this for a long, long term, meaning that every third day you do have to do something drastically different from what you do. And so that's going to be difficult for most people. And also the question about efficacy in the long run, what is going to happen? You can't just worry about the 6 months effect, the weight loss and all that. You also have to say, is this person, if somebody does it for 20 years or 30 years or 50 years, are they going to live longer, healthier? And that's what the question that I think very few people are asking. And so that's very important that we start looking at it from that point of view.
I want to get back to the first thing that you mentioned, time-restricted feeding. You had talked about eating over a 12-hour period, but there has been some work done suggesting that if humans restrict their eating to a 6 to 8-hour period, during that period of time, if they consumed the same amount of calories as in during a whole day, those calories somehow – there's a different metabolic effect, and people can actually – lose a little bit of weight through a more intense time restricted feeding, 6 to 8 hours of eating, and then the rest of the time fasting.
Yes, again, now we're entering a territory that will eliminate most people. Most people are not going to be able to eat within 6 hours every day. And so, and this enters the same domain. I've lived through it with my supervisor at UCLA many years ago, was one of the gurus of calorie restriction. His name was Roy Walford. And so I've seen the consequence of trying to impose something that is extreme, like calorie restriction, 30% calorie restriction. In the end, nobody did it, and then it took us 30 years to figure out that it was very powerful against diseases, but then it caused enough side effects to have a minimal impact on lifespan of monkeys and probably on the lifespan of humans. I think that that the six-hour method you're starting to have a domain that is very unusual for people. Very few people do that. And then you have potential side effects, for example, gallstone formation that has been shown to be elevated in people that have long periods of fasting every day. And also there's a number of studies showing increased cardiovascular disease and other problems in people that don't eat breakfast. So now if you move away from what a lot of people around the world do, which is eat, let's say, for 11, 12 hours a day, and that is a reasonable, I think, time-restricted feeding. But when you move to an extreme version of it, which is the 6 hours every day, now you're starting to enter in a domain in which you could get a lot of benefits but also a lot of problems.
So the idea of giving your body a break, it's almost like you're giving the cells and the rest of the body functions a break. So instead of food and calories coming in and the whole body process continuing, if you're fasting, you're giving the body a break. And you had said in previous research that you've done that your feeling is that it gives the body the ability to protect, repair, and rejuvenate itself. So for the person listening that's fascinated by this whole concept, what can we do to make ourselves healthier, not just weight loss, but what can we do that's safe and not in the lab that would give our cells a little bit of a break? Because, of course, eating less is probably something we could all do, all of us, every day, and we would probably see weight loss and other benefits. But in other words, what's the minimum amount we can do to reap some of the benefits that your research is showing?
Yes, and so also keeping in mind compliance, I would say there are three major things that can be done. And one is the time-restricted feeding, let's say, within 11 to 12 hours a day, right? So the Sachin Panda and others have shown that this seems to be beneficial. Most people could do it. Most people around the world, they get to 100 years of age. That was normal to them. So we also know that we're entering a territory that is very common. There's really very, very little danger of eating within 12 hours a day. So that's for sure good. The other part that I always talk about is the using the meal, the number of meals per day as a way to control how much you eat. So if you tend to be overweight, you're gaining weight, then you can go from, let's say, the 3, 4, 5, 6 meals a day, reduce it to 2 major meals per day and one snack. And again, most people can do this. And if you look at Loma Linda people, the Okinawans, the Southern Italians, I mean, if you look around the world, it's very common for people to have 2 meals a day and maybe a snack. And the third thing is the periodic fasting mimicking diet. And really, people think, well, maybe this is what we focus on. Maybe this is just a coincidence. We happen to find some data on this, and we did research on this. In fact, this is a result of 25 years of learning from the calorie restriction studies and many other studies, and say probably this is the best way to try to get all the benefits of calorie restriction without the problems. And so what this entails is about 5 days periodically of 750 to 1,100 calories of a fasting-mimicking diet, something that allows you to eat regular meals for 5 days, but also get the benefits of that you would probably get from a water-only fasting. And this is periodic, meaning you don't need to do it once a month. You may do it once a month if you're a person who's obese and has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, high fasting glucose, etc. But you know, if you're a healthy person that exercises regularly and has a vegan or vegan pescatarian diet, this could be something that you do twice a year. And so the combination of these three things, time-restricted feeding, limit the meal number, if you have, and only if you have problems with weight, and three, have periodic longer periods of fasting-mimicking diet that on one side is safe, it promotes compliance, but it's also effective with all the functions that I described earlier. That's probably the ideal way to do it. And let's not forget that, again, with these longer periods of fasting have been around in almost every religion that we can think of. You know, not all the time. People didn't do it once a month, but certainly once, twice a year, it was very common, or it is very common to some people still, to do prolonged fasting periods.
Dr. Walter Longo is a professor in gerontology and professor in biological science at the University of Southern California, also the director of the USC Longevity Institute. Thank you so much for sharing your research with us and for calling us from Italy. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
You're very welcome.